Okay, listeners, welcome once again to another edition of American Exposé. I'm Chris Gerner. It's the 23rd of August, 2005. The mess is increasing on a daily basis. The uneasiness does not leave my system. I am very concerned for our country right now. I'm understanding there's riots going on in Texas, in the Dallas area. That does not surprise me at all whatsoever, listeners. Does not surprise me at all. From one of my listeners, I caught a few minutes of your program today, but with my dad still in the hospital, I can't listen very much. I did copy Title 50, Chapter 23 to send to others. Thank you. We'll try to donate as time goes on. Thanks for all your work. Now, this is just one of many responses I've received since I've been on the air. I have a letter to read to you on the air today. I have much to cover today. Darren and I were up working on the website till 5:30 in the morning this morning. Could not get to sleep today. Much going on. For the record, since I've been on, since July 25th, officially American Exposé has been on since July 25th, I'm responsible for bringing $15,800 to the network as of yesterday, but it doesn't mean it has to stop. It has to continue. And this is the problem. It's an ongoing effort. You need to call John Stadmiller, call the network, thank them for putting this broadcast on the air, as this is the best website. I have nothing to do with the website. The information is unmatchable anywhere with the documentation. American Exposé is shining to the world about the system that we're under today. At the top, McCarthy was right, a new edition. And we're talking about Welcome to America, Tim's invention. And we see here down in the red sections where we see communism, a conspiracy, which I've covered before. Communism dead with a question mark. That's the Communist Party, USA, listeners. The Communitarian Network, community communism equals communitarianism. Then you have the Worker Communist Party of Iraq, Iraq Communist Party, and Agenda 21 in Iraq, listeners. It's all here right at the top of the website. Very easy to find people. Simple. Now, when we come back, we'll talk about the New World Order. We have much to do today. There's much going on and much information to disseminate to you. If you need to call in, make sure it's important, because this is stuff that you're not going to hear anywhere else. I'm sorry, and I wish I could say different thoughts about this. Gas price watches here. No relief in sight for gas prices. End of suburbia. Highway bill sends billions to bike trails, damming America by dam removal. And get this, people, you're going to hear today how our laws are made, a ghostwriter's view from the House of Representatives. Tomorrow, with Hansa Molina, Russian Communist Party expects 15 to 20 million people to vote in their referendum. Russia to supply 15 million tons of oil to China, which he's already covered. Russian Air Force to China and India. India, people, in military exercises, large-scale military maneuvers in Abkhazia. The United States in the CIS, a compulsion to pursue democracy, all tomorrow with Hansa Molina, listeners. Much to do today, and the New World Order next. Broadcast listeners, here we see additions on the website that will be presented sometime today. U.S. preacher Pat Robertson calls upon the USA to kill President Hugo Chavez. That's U.S. preacher Pat Robertson, listeners. The source, well, it's from several sources, but this one comes from Pravda. U.S. preacher Pat Robertson calls upon the USA to kill President Hugo Chavez. Also from Pravda, there could have been no 9/11 attacks. And they're playing the Hegelian direction, people. Pravda is on a constant basis. Facing criticism, Anna tours hunger-stricken Niger. U.S. to provide additional food aid to Africa. Kenya to get $35 million from China. Amnesty film evidence reveals horror of Zimbabwe camps. CIA World Factbook on Zimbabwe, as we have the CIA World Factbook on our website, AmericanExpose.com. And I'm so proud that I have nothing to do with it. Eastern Axis peace mission heralds new Cold War for the U.S. Antarctic ozone hole grows from last year. From the WMO. Calls for action as global warming conference in Greenland ends. Panelist who dissents on climate change quits. Coming from the New York Times. Kucinich gets hitched to British woman, as if we care. But it could be revealing. I haven't read any of these, listeners. Turkmen president bans sip cinching. I'm sorry. Turkmen president bans lip cinching. Lance Armstrong hit by doping allegations. Oh, here we go again. And he did do that 17-mile ride with our president, George Walker Bush. There's a commentary section that will be on the website today. How America Will Die by John Burke. Duck Soup by Chris Floyd. Get Off the Globalization Grid by Nancy Levant. Very important commentary. Chemtrails Out of the Closet by William Thomas. When the Army Owns the Weather by Bob Fritakis. Research to be additioned to the website today, listeners. September 8, 2000, Bill Clinton signed agreement for global conference and global governance. UNESCO and our public schools, women warned on lending names to red causes. The draft international implementation scheme for the UN Decade for Education for Sustainable Development is now available online and on the website, AmericanExpose.com. Chemtrails spraying in our sky. www.homestead.ca/chemtrails/spring-05.html. It'll be on the website later today. Chemtrails, an addition. And it's called An Introduction, Educate Yourself. HARP, the patent for HARP. It will be on the website today. Weather modification with high power electromagnetic radiation. Space-based weather control, the thunderstorm, polar solar satellite, will be all added today, sometime today, on the website, AmericanExpose.com. Fabulous information. Now, to the New World Order. We hear everybody talk about the New World Order, people. It's the New World Order this, the New World Order that. What is the New World Order? Quote, we have before us the opportunity to forge for ourselves and for future generations a new world order, a world where the rule of law, not the rule of the jungle, governs the conduct of nations. When we are successful, and we will be, we have a real chance at this new world order, an order in which a credible United Nations can use its peacekeeping role to fulfill the promise and vision of the UN's founders, end quote. Most of you have heard this before. George Herbert Walker Bush, 1991, listeners. There is the proof in the pudding. The New World Order that you hear about from everyone is the United Nations system. That is most important to comprehend. Now, we have the United States mission to the European Union, listeners. On that website, Bush confident Iraq constitution will reflect values and traditions. Rice congratulates Iraqis on submission on draft constitution. Rice says international community opposes Iran's nuclear behavior. Migration of bird flu virus raises probability of pandemic, listeners. Cheney says human cost of terrorism is staggering. Internet check to focus on Muslim integration in U.S. and Europe. And, listeners, this is nothing more than the layout dated August 23, 2005, from the United States mission to the European Union, the layout of the Hegelian dialectic. The United States mission to the European Union. From Brussels, Belgium, people. Brussels, Belgium. What else is new? Also from the United States mission to the European Union, vital. Vital connections to Chapter 40 of Agenda 21. GPS and the EU's Galileo program. Secretary, I believe this is 1994. Where President Bush authorizes a new U.S. GPS policy December 15, 1994. But before that, we go to Secretary of State Colin Powell, hail the new U.S.-EU agreement on global positioning system. That's the GPS-Galileo cooperation. As a remarkable achievement, in a signing ceremony June 26 in Shannon, Ireland, during the U.S.-EU summit, the U.S. GPS system consists of satellites broadcasting signals that can be converted into precise positioning and timing information anywhere in the world, listeners, anywhere in the world. In 1998, the European Union decided to develop its own satellite navigation system, which it called Galileo. The new agreement, Powell said, quote, manages to balance the competition that is inherent in the commercial dimension of satellite navigational technology with the cooperation necessary for the security dimension, end quote. Powell also noted that combined GPS-Galileo capabilities will open up, quote, and get this, listeners that are very well educated out there, quote, major opportunities for scientific research and creative engineering, enabling new applications, applications that we haven't even begun to think of yet, and also for the development of new technologies, end quote. Now, all of you people with satellite communications, all of you with cell phones, are fitting right into the picture. This is why I resisted cell phones all these years. I know what's coming down. I know what's going on. You're going to be tracked when the cell phone's off, people. When the cell phone's turned off, you will be tracked wherever you are. Listen to this. The United States and the European Union have completed negotiations on an agreement to harmonize their respective satellite navigation systems. The existing U.S. Global Positioning Satellite, the GPS system, and the planned European Galileo system. The agreement is scheduled to be signed June 26 by Secretary of State Colin Powell and the EU Energy and Transport Commissioner Loyola de Palacio during the U.S.-EU summit in County Clare, Ireland. John Samus, Minister of Council of the U.S. Mission to the European Union in Brussels, Belgium, called the pact a landmark agreement that will ensure a balance and mutually beneficial relationship between the two systems. Quote, and listeners that are well-educated, listen to this. It paves the way for the establishment of interoperable civil services and the commitment to pursue a common civil signal to the benefit of users and developers of satellite navigation equipment worldwide, end quote, he said. Now, this is very vital, people. Vital. A landmark agreement that will ensure a balanced and mutually beneficial relationship between the two systems. It paves the way for the establishment of interoperable civil services and the commitment to pursue a common civil signal to the benefit of users and developments of satellite navigation equipment worldwide. And adding that the agreement also addresses our mutual concerns related to the protection of allied and U.S. national security capabilities. There's much, much more to this. The GPS Overview Global Positioning System is a satellite navigation system developed and maintained by the U.S. government. Initially designed for military applications, civilian users have found numerous applications using GPS. On March 29, 1996, a presidential decision directive, PDD, was signed by President Clinton that describes GPS as an international information utility, listeners, an information or International Information Utility, the PDD, included the following directives. U.S. government will continue to operate, maintain, and provide basic GPS signals worldwide, free of direct user fees. Well, sure, it's free. They want to know where everybody is every time, anytime, all the time. We're going to connect to Chapter 40 of Agenda 21 out of this from the U.S. mission to the European Union listeners. The U.S. will advocate the acceptance of GPS and its augmentations as a standard for use by initiating international discussions and agreement with Japan and Europe. Oh, boy. I've only started today, listeners. The Hegelian dialectic is well in place. And can they be stopped? More than 7,000 invasive plants, animals, and insects have reached our shores. We'll connect to traffic on that one and cities as well. Stay with us. We'll be back to continue the broadcast. Welcome back to the broadcast. I'm Chris Stirner with the broadcast American Exposé, reestablished on Republic Broadcasting. I thank you for your support. The network thanks you for your support. Don't stop the support coming in. Don't stop supporting the sponsors. Don't stop supporting Millennium Concepts. Very, very important to do this, listeners, at 888-803-4438. She'll be a regular on Monday. As time progresses, as we continue these broadcasts, at the bottom of the first and second hour, we're going to showcase certain groups and certain players that are doing their best. At the bottom of this hour today, we will showcase the Rich Lynch Band. The Rich Lynch Band, listeners. You'll like it. And we'll have more as they come in. Back to this GPS from the U.S. European Union, listeners. Did you know that there was a U.S. mission to the European Union? How GPS works. Radio signals are sent from orbiting satellites to Earth. GPS receivers on the ground can collect and convert the radio signals into position, velocity, and time information. Some GPS receivers have the ability to store attribute information in addition to position information. Examples of attribute information are the condition of a street sign, the name of a road, or the condition of a fire hydrant. Position and attribute information can be stored in a geographic information system, GIS, to help users manage their assets more effectively. What assets are they talking about here? Here we see vulnerability assessment of the transportation infrastructure relying on GPS dated 2001, but that's beside the point. There's so much in here, listeners. These entries on the left side of the website as we go down. As I said before, Darren and myself were up late last night, into the morning, could hardly sleep this morning, so wound up with all the information that I found. We have the basis for 10 shows here today. Whether I remember to do them all or not, that's another point and problem. But U.S.-EU working on Global Positioning Systems Agreement, January 8, 2004. Here we see U.S.-EU issue joint statement on Galileo, November 22, 2003. NATO's Bell discusses GPS and Galileo security issues. NATO's Bell discusses GPS and Galileo security issues, June 19, 2002. NATO, whole and part of the United Nations system. It's just the way it is. It says so in the NATO Charter formed in 1949. So you have this information about the United States mission to the European Union. You have the information on GPS and the European Union's Galileo program. Now, we go to Agenda 21, Chapter 40. Just two paragraphs. Well, let's see. Let's try and get where we need to go. This is not what I wanted, but this is the only way Darren could do it in the late night time slot that we were together last night. Here we go to chapter 40.13. Listen carefully to this and connect it to the dot to the U.S. mission to the European Union that I just covered. Institutional capacity to integrate environment and development and to develop relevant indicators is lacking in both the national and international levels. Existing institutions and programs, such as the Global Environmental Monitoring System, GIMS, and the Global Resource Information Database, GRID, within the UNEP, that's the UN Environment Program, and different entities within the system-wide Earth Watch, will need to be considerably strengthened. Earth Watch has been an essential element for environment-related data. While programs related to development data exist in a number of agencies, there's insufficient coordination between them. The activities related to development data of agencies and institutions of the United Nations system should be more effectively coordinated, perhaps through an equivalent and complementary development watch, which with the existing Earth Watch should be coordinated through an appropriate office within the United Nations to ensure the full integration of environment and development concerns. That should bring a chill up your spine if you're aware and awake and alert and been doing your research. If not, it means very little to you. And that is the point and the problem about this whole situation we live today. We've got to do our research to connect the dots with what's going on. And the best place to do it is on the website that I have nothing to do with. And that's all I've ever wanted to do, listeners, is work together. Be a team. Throw those egos away and work together, listeners. Now we go to Chapter 40 of Agenda 21 again. Information for Decision-Making is the title of that chapter, the totalitarian chapter, I call it. We go to 40.24. Listen carefully to this paragraph. And it's under the title, Development of Documentation about Information. It says, the organs and organizations of the United Nations system, as well as other governmental and non-governmental organizations, should document and share information about the sources of available information in their respective organizations. Existing programs such as those of the Advisory Committee for the Coordination of Information Systems, ACCIS, and the International Environmental Information System, InfoTerra, should be reviewed and strengthened as required. The beat goes on, people. Connecting the dots takes work and time, but we can do it. We'll be back to continue. have it, listeners. That's Patriot Radio by the Rich Lynch Band. Rich Lynch Band. I think Dennis was the first one to find that. Maybe Rich just emailed me and I sent it to Dennis. Glad to have you aboard. Nice job. And there'll be more doing that. Any kind of new music that connects the dots to what we're doing today is vital, listeners. We do have a caller regarding the GPS that I'm talking about describing. Let's take Will in Missouri. Will, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Chris. Thanks for taking my call.
Yes, sir.
You've got a real key issue here, a real good point, and you're bringing it out very well.
Thank you.
This has been a process that has been building for a long time. I've been was in the civil engineering and the land surveying business for a long time, and first came into an understanding of GIS back in the early 70s. And basically, this computer system that puts together all of the various, the word is attribute, all the various attributes that are on the surface of the planet is extremely important for the listeners to understand how this process actually works.
Okay, now, what do they mean by attributes? Excuse me for being so ignorant.
Jump in anytime. The attributes are all of the things that can be associated with a three-dimensional coordinate point. So let's just say that we have a 3D coordinate point. That means horizontal, vertical, you know, elevation. Well, it's an X, and then you can put elevation on it. Okay, so you've got an X point, and it's the center of an intersection. And so the attributes that can run with that used to be limited basically by what a draftsman might be able to crowd in near that point riding it.
I see.
But today, with the use of VersaCAD and AutoCAD and various forms of computer work, there's an almost unlimited stackability of points that can be associated with that point. So go into this a little bit deeper. In the beginning, what we were doing was we were working with municipalities primarily as target areas where we would go in and we would locate all of the monuments in the intersections and all of the sewers and all of the downspouts and all of the culverts and all of the well meters and all of the meters on the individual places like that. And you build up this base so that they know what their chattels are, basically, all of the attributes in their area. And then with the introduction later of AutoCAD, you could put those in a digital map on layers. So you could turn on all of the water meters or you could turn off all the water meters. Do you follow me? You could turn on all of the street lights. You could turn off all of the street lights on the map.
This is fascinating. Now, they can turn them off at a moment's notice.
No, I don't mean that.
No?
I don't mean that. I'm not turning off a switch in the real world. I'm talking about the map. I can bring up on layers whatever information I want to view.
So what is the point of all of it, in your opinion?
Okay, let's just go quickly for a couple more points.
Sure, sure.
On that mapping system, with the use of a computer, we used to do all of the mapping on paper, of course, and so you were limited to what you could crowd into spaces. But with the use of a computer in multiple layers, then many other things could come in. And this is where the inventory of the world basically starts. But you know when you go on a computer and you're using a mouse and you click on something, well, that icon that you clicked on is quite large. It's composed of lots and lots of pixels. But if you go in down and start to think of micropixels, then you can go in on a piece of property. Let's use it an assessor's map. And the assessor's map was created by aerial surveying through the use of the GPS system, which is global positioning, which is not all that accurate. It's good enough for handguns and hand grenades, but it's not down to the point that it's, you know, the gnat's eyebrow yet. But it's fairly accurate. But using that system, you can go in on a piece of property. Let's say this is your lot, Chris, and there's a tax account number that shows there, and there's seven numbers in the tax account number. But you can go in and zoom in on that first number, and that whole number is made up of pixels, little black dots. And every one of those could be an icon, a micro icon. And so embedded in there could be your veterinary records, your medical records, the school records, when you pay the taxes, with what bank account you paid the taxes, whether you were ever late, whether you were ever not late, how many vehicles are associated with this property, what is their VIN numbers, who are their insurance providers, you know, what fines have been levied against him, what's the criminal background, who's this, who's that. Mm-hmm. You get the idea? Okay, now then you use this emergency or is it enhanced 911 system.
How much time do you have?
I have a lot of time.
Let's continue.
You can take the emergency 911 system, which is coming across. Now, here in Missouri, we're down to only 20 counties left that haven't been intruded with this. But basically what this is a series of cell towers and repeaters. It's sold to the public on the basis that, oh, well, you know, we could save a life if we could just get there in 3 seconds sooner. So what we're going to do is put up these cell towers on every high point so that we have complete and total grid that a cell phone or a GIS or a GPS system can operate on inside of a county. So you use that system, and what they do there is they come around and they park or they get a reading on your mailbox, and that establishes a three-dimensional coordinate grid, a geospatial identifier on your mailbox, which then they can tie all of the tax information and all of your personal records right directly to that particular address.
Mm.
Now, that wouldn't be so bad if it was used for the good, but when you consider that this information is being bundled by software providers that may not be in this nation, as you well know, these could be Brussels, they could be Jerusalem, it could be any place.
Yes.
And so when all that comes together, then you start to understand that the old conventional, hey, this is my yard, this is my life, that all goes out the window when you bring in GIS tied to GPS with multiple-use databases, and your idea here of the interoperable civic services as a common civil signal. This thing gets to the point where, you know, your underwear size is known to the world.
Oh, boy. And so this information for decision-making on Agenda 21 is quite appropriate to what we're talking about here.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yes. And all of these things are coming on us at NS, as you often say, and it's kind of it's a very deceptive smokescreen because there are a lot of well-meaning people that are involved in developing the geospatial GIS systems, and they're working just like I was way back in the 70s for a civil engineering firm, and basically we were collecting all that data thinking that it was going to reduce the time necessary and engineering fees to provide engineering services to our client communities.
Oh, boy.
But it's been going for a long time, and it started really with the Superfund cleanup money. That was where the big money came into the process, where the larger engineering companies went all around the United States and the world, mapping and making detailed analysis of hotspots. But it has gone a long way since then.
So you're quite concerned, as I am.
Absolutely. I think that this enhanced 911 system, the more I've studied it, and I've been fighting it and studying it for several years now as it's come on me out here out in the hinterlands, that this system is not a friendly system. And I've talked with various first responders, and they've grown up in the areas. They know where the people live and stuff like that. And if you noticed, and this is important, you can look in these catalogs that fly into the mailbox, but you'll find all kinds of you know, anywhere from $300 to $900 navigation systems that sit on your dashboard.
Yes.
All right. Instead of a folding paper map that you got for free at the gas station.
Yes.
Right. Well, that's the system. And so one of the advantages of extending an emergency 911 system into a remote county is that then you're tied in as you drive along. Your little nav unit there is talking to all the emergency 911 towers, guiding you along the route.
Mm-hmm.
It's so draconian that someone, let's say Hans's pal, could come over on a boat and basically take a GPS system and put it in his pocket and walk directly to my house and fire shot.
My goodness.
From anywhere on the planet. And besides that, you can also key in and then go in. Like I said, now, I don't know whether the technology is here hot and ready and going. I imagine it is. I'm not that bright. I've been out of the loop for 10 years. But if you were to just take an assessor's map concept, for instance, where you take an individual piece of property and then you break that map area up into pixels, the amount of data that could be stored in there and archived in there is tremendous. As click points.
Oh, boy.
Yep. Anyway, I thought I'd lay that on you. You're doing a great job. I sure enjoy the broadcast, and I like the direction that you take the show.
Well, Will, I sure appreciate it, and I do appreciate your information. Anytime you have more to add, don't hesitate to call in.
Thanks so much.
Thank you, Will.
Mm-hmm. Bye-bye.
Bye now. This is the way it gets done, listeners. Working together, coming together on RBN. So, that portion of this broadcast is very, very important. You need to promote it, get CDs. The archives are free, which means you have to support this network however you can. The sponsors are here. More should come. Republic Trading is moving in a positive direction. So we kind of leave this behind us now. Unfortunately, I have to do this because the information is stacked up and the connecting of the dots is monumental. From the U.S. House of Representatives, listeners, this is very, very vital. It's very wordy, which means you're going to have to get this and listen to it a few times. And certainly you can access it on our access this on our website, AmericanExpose.com, on the left side as we've built up the left side. Office of Legislative Counsel, listeners, U.S. House of Representatives. And this comes courtesy of another partner, Patrick. Patrick sent this to me. I got it in the received it in the mail yesterday. This is by Sandra Strawkoff, Assistant Counsel, Office of Legislative Counsel, U.S. House of Representatives. How our laws are made, a ghostwriter's view. Frequently, on the floor of the House of Representatives, one will hear a member refer to another as the author of a bill who has carefully crafted the language of the proposed legislation. Statements like these make me smile. That's Sandra Strawkoff. Because of the members are the authors, then I and my colleagues in the Office of the Legislative Council of the House of Representatives are the ghost writers. The Office of the Legislative Council, listeners, created by statute originally in 1918, is currently composed of 30-plus attorneys who generally toil anonymity at least as far as those outside the legislative process are concerned. Attorneys are charged with taking the idea of any member of committee of the House of Representatives requesting the services of the office and transforming it into legislative language or, as one of my clients used to say, the magic words. We participate in all stages of the legislative process, be it preparing for a bill for introduction, drafting amendments, participating in any conference of the two houses of Congress to resolve differences between the two versions of the bill, or incorporating changes in the bill at each stage for publication and ultimately for presentation to the president. Frequently, we draft while debate is going on, both during committee consideration and on the House floor, and may be asked to explain the meaning or effect of language or legislative language. Although the office has drafted manuals and guidelines, drafting legislation is without question a matter of on-the-job training. For up to 2 years, a new attorney in the office, while communicating directly with clients being congressional staff members, but occasionally the members themselves, on legislative requests, works under the tutelage of a senior attorney in preparing for introduction a wide variety of bills to gain as much experience as possible in developing drafting skills. We'll be back to continue with this one. Stay with us.
For my country, for the pain that it's been through, she's been made to suffer for the profit of a few.
There it is, poker face listeners. Another one. that needs your support. Pokerface.com is their website. Oh, boy. So right now we're dealing with the Office of Legislative Counsel, which is of the House of Representatives, is a legislative drafting service of the House of Representatives. Their clients are the committees and members of the House, listeners. And they say the office had its origins in the Legislative Drafting Research Fund established at Columbia University in 1911 through the work of Joseph P. Chamberlain, professor of public law at the university. In 1916, Middleton Beeman, the law librarian of the Library of Congress, was requested by the fund to conduct a demonstration of the usefulness of a legislative drafting service to the Congress. The success of Mr. Beeman's work on various pieces of legislation resulted in the establishment of a legislative drafting service by Section 1303 of the Revenue Act of 1918, which was enacted on February 24, 1919. What else happened in 1919, listeners? Our Congress refused to join the League of Nations after the First World War, created by the Federal Reserve System, immediately after being implanted into the United States of America in 1913. So we continue with this. On October 26, 1970, and that would be Richard Nixon, the President signed into law the Legislative Reorganization Act of 1970, Title V of which set forth a separate charter for the Office of the Legislative Council of the House of Representatives. Section 502 of the Act provides that the purpose of the office is, quote, to advise and assist the House of Representatives and its committees and members in the achievement of a clear, faithful, and coherent expression of legislative policies, end quote. The structure of the office consists of approximately 35 attorneys and a support staff of about 15 individuals, and is headed by the Legislative Council of the House. The Legislative Council is appointed by the Speaker of the House and, subject to the approval of the Speaker, appoints and fixes the compensation of the office's personnel. The operation of the office is in many ways unique among governmental offices. There are no formal committees or departments. Attorneys in the office naturally develop special expertise in certain areas of the law. However, all attorneys are expected to cooperate with and assist each other in handling the workload of the office. Many attorneys work in informal groups or teams of two or more to address a general zone of federal law. The office, they say, listeners, is impartial as to issues of legislative policy and does not advocate the adoption or rejection of any proposal or policy. In providing services to committees and members, the office will assist the committee's members and their staffs in analyzing the effects of legislative proposals, but will not advocate any position, they say. The office has traditionally been career-oriented, with unusually low turnover among the legal staff. Experienced attorneys in the office specialize in one or more areas of law and will normally handle requests for assistance in those areas. We're just about, well, we're done with the first hour. Okay, we'll cover this letter and a little bit more on this, because it's very, very vital to know where our laws are coming from, listeners. We'll be back to continue with the broadcast into the second hour.